Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Good morning and you're very welcome to the programme and welcome to the studio. The Minister for Finance, Jack Chambers, and Minister for Public Expenditure, Pascal Donoghue. You're both welcome and thank you for joining us this morning. The morning after the day before, because you delivered the budget for 2025 yesterday, and today you're going to be taking questions and calls from our listeners, and there's still time to get in touch. So let me remind you at home how to do that. You can WhatsApp us this morning and the number is 0870 32 32 32. 0870 32 32 32. Text us 51551 or email todaycb@rte.ie. And the phone lines are open. So pick up the phone and call us now on this number, 0818 715 105. That's 0818 715 105. And we'll go straight to that phone line now and to Barry Murphy. Good morning, Barry.
Morning, Claire. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks very much for calling us. What question do you have after that budget yesterday?
Yeah, well, it's in relation to the VAT increase on the hospitality sector. So, good morning, lads. I'll address this to Pascal. Since you increased the VAT rate to 13.5% last year, over 600 food-led businesses have been forced to close their doors. And despite calls from everyone in the hospitality sector, including your own backbenchers and party colleague, Minister for Enterprise, Peter Burke, you've refused to lower the rate. And what's really disappointing, and you had the money at your disposal and you refused to do it and you turned a deaf ear.
And Barry, you're in hospitality yourself, are you?
Yeah, we have a takeaway in Dyne, a small family-run business in Durrow. And this has a huge impact on us. And so it was hope aired in the week. They have been saying all the right things. And Taoiseach was in Tullamore a couple of weeks ago. And he spoke about how they needed to support the hospitality sector, keep businesses open. And there was going to be a robust response. Same from Mr. Burke. Huge hope. And then yesterday morning to wake up to news, totally angry, deflated. You know, and listen, you have to feel sorry for all the people that have lost their businesses over the last year. They should be ashamed of themselves.
All right, well, let's put that to the ministers now. Minister Chambers, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, no, and thank Barry for the contribution this morning. And I know how difficult it's been for a lot of small businesses in particular, I know, and for the hospitality sector with the cost increases which have been imposed on business, particularly from an energy perspective over the last 2 years, some of which hasn't been within the government's control. And that's why for next year, Minister Burke has worked on a new specific grant on supporting SMEs and specifically focused on the retail and hospitality sector.
Is this the 4,000 euros?
Yeah, so it's an extension of the increased cost of business grant that was introduced last year as a cost of living measure. Just to give a wider sense, and I know...
But you have to have applied and received that grant last year, do you, to be eligible for the next round of the 4,000?
Correct. And we know there was, you know, big numbers within the hospitality and retail sector.
Did you get that, Barry, that grant last year?
Yeah, it was actually embarrassing, Claire. That was announced at the budget last year, and it was announced, and actually there was no plan for when it was actually to be paid. And I checked my email this morning. That was announced at last year's budget, and we did it to our local county council, and I registered for it on the 29th of April, which is 6 months later. Now, what we got for that was, it was because we were a small business in Durrow, a small local town, so our rates aren't particularly high, so we got 600 euros.
Right.
So, and then they paid out another 600 maybe during the summer, but like it's pittance.
Okay,
absolute pittance.
But that means now, are you entitled to this 4,000 that was announced yesterday?
Well, I hope I am, but Karen, I'll just, Claire, if I just explain this to the listeners, if they're listening, what this VAT increase means. Like, last year my VAT bill at 9%, and Pascal there, you're good at numbers, you can work it out yourself, it was 50%, or 50,000 at 9%. This year, because of the increase of 50%, it's now 75,000, so it's 25,000 extra, which is totally unsustainable. So you can work it out, Claire. Take your 4,000 off 25. That leaves it 19.
Okay.
So it's crazy stuff.
Right. Minister Donoghue, can I ask you about this? Because it was your own colleague, Peter Burke, who really went out on a limb on this and made a commitment that he would push. Did he meet a brick wall when he went to speak to you about it?
So, Barry, thank you very much for calling in. And I have been involved in the hospitality sector and representing it for many years myself in different roles. And I know how hard it is to run a business, how hard it is to employ people, particularly a small one. But what is also a factor that myself and Minister Chambers have to consider is we will have many people calling in here today making very understandable and legitimate cases to us for needs that they have too. I have taken up and down the VAT rate. I took it down during the pandemic when we had to support the hospitality sector because they had no customers. And if the decision had been made to reduce the VAT rate again, the cost of that would have been between 700 to 800 million euro, which means there's lots of other things that are, you know, that are important to other callers that are also important in our society that we might not have been able to make progress on.
Mm-hmm.
And what Minister Chambers has done is changes in the VAT threshold to help with cash flow, changes in the earned income tax grant that has a particular, the self-employed tax credit that has a particular impact for people who are working for themselves. And then in relation to the point about Minister Burke, he did make the case first because he represents the sector. But what we have to do is look at the cost of that change and evaluate that against all the other demands that we have.
Well, there was talk about a compromise at 11%. That wasn't a flyer either, was it not? On cost grounds or why?
So just to give the wider context, so we've a tax package of 1.4 billion euro. And when we sat down to discuss this during the summer, we know that at full employment and wage growth in the economy, we wanted to deliver an income tax package so people with wage growth weren't being excessively levied with additional income
so
tax.
So that was where the priority was
That's one component of it. But also when the government decided to reduce VAT temporarily during the pandemic, that was a temporary measure to respond back to the issues that many people in the hospitality sector faced. And we've had a 12-month cycle now of the VAT rate at 13.5%. The 11% is challenging because it affects everything at the 9% rate. So, for example, if you've other areas of the economy that are at 9%, they would have had to increase to 11%. So if you take, for example, okay, the continued reduction in gas and electricity bills that we've brought through for the winter period to the end of April, we would have had to increase that to 11% if we were to do a reduction to 11% from 13.5% for hospitality.
Barry, to come back to you, you're in the middle of this. You're saying that, you know, it puts your business on a knife edge. Is that where you are now?
See, the big mistake Pascal made here, and listen, everyone appreciated what happened during the pandemic, but what really was worse then when the war in Ukraine started, and that's when the real trouble, that's when the cost, the whole energy, and it drove up everything, all the ingredients, plus the staff costs increase. Why didn't Pascal at that time, instead of going from 9 to 13.5, why didn't maybe go to 10 and do it in small increments and see how the business responded? When he dropped the USC yesterday, he went from 4 to 3. And maybe next week we'll go from 3 to 2. But he was about able to go back from 9 to 13.5 in one jump, which is a 50% there, which is absolutely crazy. As I said, I feel very sorry for people listening this morning that have lost their business over the last 12 months and more people that will go over the next 12 months.
Okay.
So listen, I just finally plead to both of them, they need to go back and look at this again.
Will you, ministers,
of the business.
Will you, ministers, look at it again?
The budget has been decided and we've set out what's possible in the context of budget 2025,
so no.
And we won't be making further tax changes.
Did you want to come in there?
Reason for why we have different VAT rates and we don't have the kind of flexibility that you have elsewhere is because we're part of a single market overall, there's only a specific number of VAT rates that are possible under
law.
So you
can't do 10%?
We can't do these kind of different figures that the case is sometimes made for.
Okay.
That does not apply to USC, but I just go back to the broader point that I made, the cost of this measure and all of the other things that we have to also do while recognising how important our hospitality sector is.
All right, Barry, thank you for calling us. Let's go to Alice now, who's on the line. Good morning, Alice.
Good morning, Claire. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Not at all. You're in County Cork. You're a childcare provider, is that right?
So I'm a childcare worker.
Okay, so tell us your situation and what your question is.
So basically, I suppose, while we do welcome the extra funding that has been given for families in regards to childcare, what exactly have the providers and the childcare workers like myself been given in this budget? I suppose, you know, it's great to give the parents the extra help, but we don't have the spots to give them. You know, we don't have the availability to give them. We have a huge long waiting list. And, you know, annual funding needs to be increased to support, you know, I suppose the quality, the sustainability and better pay for us as educators. And I feel like we haven't been listened to once again as the educators in the sector.
So you're taking the calls from the people who are trying to get a place for their children in a childcare provider, and you're the person having to say no at the end of that call. Is that what you're doing?
Yes, and we have to say no, and that we have a waiting list. Our waiting list is now closed. And we have, even for example, yesterday a man called and he said, I've been to 15 different places. This is my last resort to come to you, and we could not offer him that place. So what good is that funding to families when they don't have, we can't give them that spot.
Okay, so your question is, what exactly has been provided for childcare in this budget? Is that fair to say?
Yes.
All right. Alice's question there, Minister Donoghue.
Thank you, Alice, for calling in. So first, just to make the case for what is happening at the moment that Alice did acknowledge in the first part of her question to me. We'll have next year have around 210,000 children in our country on the National Childcare Scheme that is delivering a fees reduction to their parents of up to 40%, making a really big difference to childcare costs. Alice's specific question then is what is being done to support the sector itself, because there's little point having affordability measures if the space isn't there. The answer to that question is in the overall childcare budget, which is around 1.37 billion euro. Within that, 350 million euro has been ring-fenced to support the sector itself. What that will help us do is do two things. Firstly, support the wages and terms and conditions of those who are working within the sector, by therefore leading to more spaces in the future. And secondly, give us the funding to try to support the development of the sector overall. So the answer is 350 million euro, and that is around an 18% increase on where we have been a year before that.
Okay, but you know, you see what her problem is. She's answering the phone to people who have tried 10 or 15 other creches and can't get a place. It's a very difficult position for her to be in.
Oh, of course it is. Very difficult for Alice, and of course very difficult for the parents who are looking for the spaces for their kids. But this is the very reason why, and it's something Minister Roderick O'Gorman has been very, very focused on. In the childcare scheme that we have, it doesn't just focus on the affordability of the fees. It has set aside money to help with the wages and terms and conditions of those working within the sector to help it grow in the time ahead. Because it's very difficult for Alice, but also very difficult for families who can't get onto a scheme that is helping with the affordability and quality of childcare.
Okay, Alice, so the Minister understands that it's very difficult, but I suppose that doesn't help you in work today.
I suppose it's just like, you know, if we're expected to provide a high quality service, we feel like we're not recognised as professionals in our job. You know, we're not, I suppose, I know I do appreciate that you said that the 350 million will be coming in, and, you know, but it's just as of now, where do we stand now? We saw nothing from this budget as the provider and from the worker point of view.
I just want to emphasise again that out of that over 1.3 billion euro, 350 million euro of it is set aside to support the sector itself, to support wages and conditions and support the professional development of the sector. Because Alice's point is fair, that as we make the scheme and the cost of childcare come down, it's understandable, therefore, that parents want to be able to access it. And I want to see that happen too. But the provision is there in the budget to do this. And I know Roderick and his department will be spelling out the detail of that in the days ahead.
All right, Alice, thank you very much for calling us today. We're going to go now to Anne. Anne is on the line. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning. Thank you for letting me put some questions.
Not
to
at
the
all.
Minister.
Delighted to have you. So tell us what you think and what your question is after yesterday's budget.
Well, disaster, putting it mildly. My question is, why has the tax exemption for individual pensioners of 18,000 euros per year not changed for over 6 years? In putting it in context, if anyone that has a private pension of over 500 euros a month will be paying tax on the 12 euros that increased from January, which will bring it down to 9.60 euros a week.
Right. So this is your, are you in this position now?
Yes.
So you have a small private pension and you get the state pension and you're paying tax?
Yes.
So that,
there will be an increase of 1 euro, or €2.40 a week on the 12 euros. So it'll bring it down to €9.60 a week.
Okay. Okay, so you want to know why has that tax-free limit for pensioners, it hasn't increased in a number of years, in 6 years or so. Minister Chambers, what do you say to Anne?
No, I just want to thank Anne for calling in this morning and for raising this. So as you've said, and you're correct, a person can avail of the age exemption limit of which is up to €18,000, or be taxed through the normal tax system and the system of tax credits. And if the person's income is greater than the exemption limit, given the significant increase to tax credits broadly, which we've progressed as a government, it may be preferable for someone to actually use tax credits rather than the tax-free limit for pensioners. And every person, whether you're a pensioner or anyone in the economy, should have the most beneficial assessment from a tax perspective. So if you take, for example, over the lifetime of this government, the entry point to income tax for a person aged 65 or over when it comes to tax credits has gone from $17,725 in 2021 to $21,225, which is a 3,500 increase over the cumulative period of years. So what I would suggest is that if some people may have been historically on a particular tax-free limit of €18,000, but the differential in tax credits over a period of years may mean that there may be more beneficial to them to be taxed through the regular system.
Okay, so Anne may need to look into that and change how it's calculated.
And revenue, if there's engagement with revenue, they will give guidance as to the most beneficial or preferential treatment when it comes to income tax.
Anne, when you joined us on the line, you said the budget was a disaster. Was there something else you weren't happy with?
Yes, it's the, because I'm not entitled to any means tested stuff. And it was like, if when I applied for the fuel allowance, when it increased, I was told that my, when my children still live at home because they can't afford to buy a house, and that their gross income was taken into account for means testing the fuel allowance. Mm-hmm. Now, nobody on earth comes home with their gross wages. And so I was just wondering why that was that.
Right, so you can't get the increased fuel allowance because your son who can't buy a house is living at home.
I can't get it at all.
You can't get it at all. Okay.
No.
Minister Donoghue, do you want to take that? It seems very unfair on Anne, doesn't it?
But we have, over recent budgets, tried to expand the number of people who can access the fuel allowance. I appreciate for Anne, though, of course, it's very frustrating if she can't. But over budgets, changes have been made there. And it does point to a challenge that we have. But it is a consequence of the fact that we try to target the money that's available to those who may need it the most. If we then don't have some means testing in place, those payments and funding are then made available to everybody, which opens up different problems because some who may not need it then do get the payment. Yep. But I know that sounds a little academic to Anne, and that is why over recent budgets we have looked to increase the number of people who can access that payment.
Okay, but that's no help to Anne, as you rightly said.
I acknowledge
there.
That.
And she's being penalised because her son, who's an adult, can't get a home, which takes us into a whole other area.
The budget of yesterday contained further additional money to help us build more homes next year. But when we are evaluating access to some payments, it is done on the basis of the income in the home itself. And as I said, we've tried to increase the number of people who can get the payment. But I appreciate for Anne, it doesn't sound like she's one of those people and therefore can understand why she's frustrated. But I hope budget after budget, we can make further progress there.
OK, Anne, we didn't help you much there, but maybe on the tax credit side, there might be something that you can look into.
Yeah, well, I have, as far as I'm concerned, I do engage with revenue all the time. And as far as I know, I have all the tax credits I can get.
So
now, I have no problem means testing stuff.
Yeah.
But I have the problem is with the way it's done, like gross wages instead of net. If it was net income, I might qualify.
That's on the fuel allowance side of things, though.
On the fuel allowance.
Yeah.
I have no problem with means testing. I know where they're coming from, but nobody comes home with their gross wages.
Yeah, well, you're right there, and it is working against you. Anne, thanks so much for joining us on the line.
Thanks, Anne.
That's Anne. Let's go to Maria now. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, Claire. How are you?
I'm very well, and lovely to speak to you. Are you a nurse?
I am. I'm a public health nurse.
Okay, so tell us about how the budget affected you and what you thought of it all.
Well, first of all, good morning, Jack and Pascal. And
good morning, Maria.
Good morning, Maria.
I hope you slept last night. I suppose.
Not a loss.
You know, listening to Anne and listening to Alice, that's nothing that I don't hear every day sure. on the course of my work from the patients I meet. And I suppose listening to what you're giving to the HSE, the billions. So I suppose my question is, aesthetically, it's going to look fantastic from the outside in. So I'd love to look from the inside out. And how are we going to attract nurses back into the HSE, to this beautiful career that I've been in for over 44 years? And equally, the cost of living is so high. I can't see anything that's going to change for me as a public health nurse out there visiting people from birth to death. And the care needs haven't changed in 44 years.
So are you saying, Maria, that people are not joining, or are they leaving because of the conditions, the pay and the conditions?
They're leaving because of the pay and the conditions, Claire. And like, I'm 61 and I would be one of the only ones from my class that's left in nursing. Now, I love it. But equally, there are people being trained and they're leaving. They're leaving because of the cost of living in Ireland and because of the salary. And they're getting much better paid abroad. I've worked abroad. So I suppose as a public health nurse for 22 years, my work hasn't changed. My population has got bigger, but I love my work. So I'm curious to know, like with the Children's Hospital, with the cost of living, how are they going to attract staff into this profession?
Okay. Minister Donoghue.
Maria, thank you very much. And I can hear the passion for your work come true in your voice. And I can only imagine the difference that you make to those that you support in your community as a public health nurse. I see the great work that your colleagues do in the part of Dublin that I represent, and I know how valuable it is. In relation to your question, how are we doing it? Well, firstly, the number of people who are working as nurses within our health service has grown over the last number of years. If I look at where we are now, since 2020, it's increased by 9,400 nurses to around 47,500 nurses within our country. So the number of nurses overall that we have is growing. And to answer your question then about how we can keep and grow this in the future, I think, Maria, there's two elements to this. The first one is how we pay you. And we have a public service wage agreement that is in place now for this year and for next year, to increase the wages of you and your colleagues, because God knows you deserve it. And then secondly, it is how we can create a work environment which recognises and reflects the quality of you do by the investment that we put into our primary care centres and to our hospitals. And yesterday's budget in terms of investment in primary care centres and new hospital beds aims to do that too.
Okay, but Maria mentioned this, you know, the hospital, the cost of the Children's Hospital. In that context, it's very difficult to go out and do your job every day, see that the younger people who are being trained in this country are leaving to go and work somewhere else for a better life, and yet we can spend all of that money on that building.
Which, when it's open, will be the essential answer to the question of how we can better look after very sick children in our country better, and provide the nurses and doctors and consultants who do that exceptional work in an environment that meets their needs and meets the needs of children, while acknowledging, as I do, all the difficulties and things we've learned from in doing it. But this is also why we have increased investment in our health service year after year, and we are seeing the signs of the impact of that. We're seeing waiting lists falling. We're seeing life expectancy at a high level. But much of that is due to people like Maria and her colleagues and the work they do, which we try to support in the way I've outlined.
Maria.
Well, yeah, I hear what you're saying, Pascal, but unfortunately a lot of what you're saying isn't filtering down to the frontline staff. So I suppose where I'd be coming from, even at some at my age and having worked abroad, is I suppose really do listen to us. You know, there's a huge amount of paperwork, a huge amount of focus on computers and on emails. Go and visit to any of the hospitals and you will see people sitting at desks and on the computer who was really sitting with the patient. Mm-hmm. And I suppose the patient care needs haven't changed over the years, but who was really, truly listening. And I'd love you to listen to that. And I'd love Minister Donnelly and Bernard Gloucester to listen to that.
So, Maria, thank you again. I see myself in the Mafra Hospital, which is the main hospital near where I live and represent, the work that that nurses do, and also the burdens and challenges that they face. And what we are trying to do through investment in IT and also through hiring people within the HSE who are not nurses and doctors but will support you in your work to try to further make a difference to the care that you give.
Okay, Maria, thank you very much for your call. That's Maria there. And we're going to take a break, but do keep the calls coming in. We remind you of the number. It's 0818 715 107. That's 0818 715 105. And the ministers are staying with us back after this. And we're back here and still joined by the Minister for Finance, Jack Chambers, and Minister for Public Expenditure, Pascal Donoghue, for our budget phone-in. And we go to Áine. Good morning, Áine.
Good morning. Good morning, ministers.
Good morning, Áine.
My question my question relates to inheritance tax and the unequal treatment of persons with children and those who do not have children. There was a campaign over the past few months to increase the bans, which you did yesterday. I personally was quite happy with the old bans, the 335,000. Etc. And I'm equally happy with the improved figures. But how can the budget provide more benefits to people with children and continue to withhold this benefit from those without children?
Okay, because the situation is
an absolute minimum. Yeah.
If you are a single person and you don't have children, there's a very low limit on what you can leave as a tax-free inheritance to somebody.
Absolutely.
Okay, so...
And the same would go for married people who don't have children.
All right, so that's on inheritance tax. You have increased the threshold, but the problem is, for Áine, you're still left with this very, very low allowance as a single person. What do you say, Minister Chambers?
No, and thanks so much, Áine, for calling in this morning. And it's something that I've been listening to in my own constituency in West Dublin, and indeed many of my colleagues throughout the country on the wider issue of inheritance tax and the fact that the thresholds are quite low for many people, particularly with rising property prices. And then the fact, as you've said, at Group B and C, they're at a much lower level compared to the Group A threshold. So what I tried to do yesterday... Yes?
I'm not concerned about the bans. I'm concerned about the fact that there is different treatment for people with children and people without children.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that point. And I suppose there's been a historic differentiation there. And what I tried to do yesterday with the available tax package that I have of 1.4 billion euro, about 88 million euro was the cost of the revision that I've made. If the actual cost of increasing Group B and C thresholds is significant for every change that you made. So I made a 20% increase revision in the thresholds yesterday across the three bands.
What Áine is saying is there's nothing there for her issue.
The increased threshold goes, except it's marginal because it's quite low. The cost of a very significant revision or equalising Group A with Groups B and C would be in the tens of millions or perhaps in the hundreds of millions. I have to get
so
it fully costed.
So you couldn't have afforded to do it,
It wasn't within the summer economic statement and the budget parameters that I was able to deliver yesterday. But what I've tried to do, Áine, was to make a start on the upward revision on capital acquisitions tax, listening to people, and I appreciate the point that you've raised. And I think as the economy gives us capacity to make further changes from a tax perspective, I think there should be further revisions in future years, and I would support that. Equalising the thresholds, though, would be a very significant tax expenditure cost, and we'd have to balance that against the other considerations that we'd have from a tax perspective, whether it's on income tax or enterprise support and other measures.
So you feel, Áine, that this just unjust?
Yes. No, can I come in there? Because the point is being missed completely. I'm not talking about the amount it's going to cost extra in putting it up to 400,000. That's not the issue. The issue is that a childless couple or a single person who doesn't have children don't have control over an amount that they can leave whatever way they wish.
Mm-hmm.
And to whoever they wish.
Yeah.
So at the very minimum, we should have an allowance or an entitlement to leave 400,000 to whomsoever we wish to leave it to, free of tax, no strings attached. And then we can avail of Group B and Group C and Group all the rest. It's at the very bottom of the scale where it starts off. That's where the inequality comes in.
Okay,
in the treatment of those who are disposing of assets.
Okay, and you acknowledge that point, Minister, but you're saying that it is something that would cost hundreds of millions of euros.
No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't cost hundreds of millions because I saw an article from in the paper there recently from the CSO, and the figures are tiny. Inheritance tax only collects about 0.6%. Of all the tax.
The changes I made yesterday totaled 88 million, and the revisions on Group B and C was a central component to the 88 million overall cost, and it would be at least tens of millions for each upward revision, and to equalise it to 400,000 would be a significant tax expenditure cost. But I acknowledge the point that Anya's making, and I accept that for people that want to leave something behind, and you're not benefiting from Group A, it is quite penal presently because it's at such a low level, and that's why I attempted to make a 20% upward revision yesterday. I think it was a start. Equalising the rates or the thresholds and the groups though would be a significant tax cost,
okay,
which you'd have to. Choices made on other tax measures.
We'll move on, Anya. Thank you very much for our call. Helen is on the line. Good morning, Helen. You're in Dublin.
Good morning, Claire.
Thank
and
you.
Ministers.
Thank you for calling
us.
Thank you for taking my call. Okay. And congratulations, Minister Chambers, on your first budget presentation.
Thanks so much, Helen. I really appreciate it.
Okay. My query is in relation to disability allowance means testing. Our own particular situation here is that we have a son and daughter who are now in their early 30s, and at age 11 and 12 they were diagnosed with a rare progressive neurological condition. It's Friedreich's ataxia. By the time they were in their mid-teens, they were full-time wheelchair users. Their life expectancy is decreased, unfortunately. They've lost friends of similar ages to this condition. And I'm wondering, could any consideration be given to abolishing the means test for disability allowance in the cases of such permanent progressive disability requiring full-time care?
How does that means test affect your children, Helen?
Okay. At the moment, we're particularly worried about our daughter. She's in a long-term relationship and she cannot consider marriage, cohabiting, or even, as she would lose her means test payment of disability allowance. She's expressed concern to me that she'd have to even ask her partner for the price of a pair of socks. Mm-hmm. Due to the severity of her condition and the accompanying fatigue, she's never been able to work. And I am aware of others in the same situation. So, you know, if the disability allowance means test could even be individualised, not a partner's income,
yes,
be taken into account.
It would make a huge difference. Okay,
so I know that.
Well, let's get an answer, Helen.
Cater for all.
Yeah,
facilities. There's also the question of, this was another part of it, that we're now trying to make provision for our son and daughter's future. So, it would be one less worry if we didn't have to consider the implications of inheritance tax. So if this could be disregarded in means test for disability allowance, it would be a big plus also.
All right, so people who receive permanent disability allowance, you believe they should be exempted from inheritance tax. So let's take both of those questions now. The first one, means test for people for disability allowance, Mr. Donoghue. You understand the question that Helen has asked there and the difficulties that it presents her children?
I do indeed. And good morning, Helen, and thank you for calling in.
Good morning, Minister.
And I'm really aware, Helen, that when I begin to talk about figures like I'm about to do now, they of course will feel very hollow in comparison to the care and love that you've had to give to your son and daughter, who obviously have really difficult and very important healthcare needs that I'm sure you've been at the fore as their mum in having to provide. So with that said, if I could just say a little bit about this particular payment and about some of the issues that we have to consider in relation to it. So at the moment, the disability allowance, the annual value of that payment each year is around 2.2 billion euro. And the reason for that is in our country at the moment, we have just over 1 million people who qualify for having a disability. What we've tried to do in recognition of your value, Helen, and what you do is ensure that the disregard, and the disregard by that what I mean is the level of savings that you have and the level of income that you earn, that they're at their highest possible level, so you can still qualify for a disability payment. And that's how we have tried to meet your needs insofar as we can, and recognising the value of the work that you do. But if we were in a position, for example, where we were to not have any kind of means testing, and it was to be universally payment, the cost of that could be up to 6 billion euro, up to 6 billion euro, I stress, because of how many people we have within our country who are do have a disability. So, look, I really appreciate the challenges that you'll have overcome and that your son and daughter have and all that you have to go through. But it's recognised in the value of the payment, or we try to, and trying to ensure that the means testing is as wide as possible to help as number of people qualify for the payment.
Okay. Can I ask you, Helen, how you feel about the once-off payments that we heard about in the budget?
I don't think they're, you know, very significant at all. I'm really talking about the future and future planning for them. Mm-hmm. Once-off is okay, it's good, I guess, but at the same time, I'm talking about the future issue, which isn't addressed here. It's the means testing in general.
Yeah. Well,
and I understand when people can't work at all.
Yeah.
And when they have a disability from a very young age, they really are discriminated against.
Well, Minister Donoghue, you're someone who talks about planning a lot, you know, and making sure that the future is secure. Using those one-off payments or spending money on one-off payments is not really future-proofing, is it?
Well, of course, whatever argument I make about future-proofing in the context of what Helen does, again, I acknowledge it can sound a little bit academic. But what we are trying to do here is by having some payments that could well be temporary, like the one-off payments, it ensures that when the cost of living difficulties begin to recede a little bit, we're then in a position to be able to maintain the value of the core rate changes that we are making. And for example, if you're a carer at the moment...
But you could target all of that money you have, which would stretch it out for a much longer term for the people who really need it,
Claire,
rather than giving people who don't need it a double childcare benefit.
But Claire,
example.
Isn't this the heart of the issue? This is a means-tested payment. So you talk about the need for... I don't mean to cut across you, Helen, but I just want to answer Claire's question because it cuts to the heart of it. You talk about the need to target payments to those who need it the most. The disability payment is targeted. It is means tested. So it meets that criteria.
But Helen's daughter can't have a live-in partner at the moment, can't get married because she's at risk of losing her disability payment and knows that she will never be able to work.
And again, I guess that's the other side of the coin then. If we were to have a payment like this with no means test in relation to it, it would then be so broad that it would raise other issues. And the cost of that, as I said, could be up to 6 billion. And just to put that in context, 6 billion, you know, we have a budget of around 106 billion euro. So that would be a huge change in how we spend the country's money. But again, just please allow me to just again recognise that all Helen does as a carer and as a mother to, I'm sure, her wonderful children, who I know have much they have to deal with in their personal lives.
But Helen, you're worried about the future. That's
I'm
the
not,
bottom line.
Minister Donoghue, all due respects, I appreciate your answer, but I am not at all referring to carers in this matter, which we don't qualify for, incidentally. But there's nothing you wouldn't do for your children.
Sure,
but
of course.
I, I am concerned. It's the future I'm concerned for, the two issues, that if say, for instance, disability allowance, in certain cases where it's permanent and they've never had a chance to work, that if they could actually, if their individual circumstances could be taken into account, not their partner's, for this payment, mm-hmm. surely there should be some staggered method of disability payments like they do in other countries. All where right. the progression or the nature of the seriousness of the disability okay. and the whole circumstance could be taken okay. into account.
Helen,
sorry for taking all of your time.
No, you didn't take all of our time, and we're delighted to talk to you, and thank you very much for calling in. Helen, thank you for being with us. I just want to go to Michael now. We want to try and get as many people as we can in the hour. Michael, you're on a boat, are you?
That's right, Claire, yeah. I'm a fisherman down here. I'm chairman of National Inshore Fishermen's Organisation. And I just like to ask both ministers why, not just in this budget, but in every budget, there's never, ever, ever anything for our industry. We're primary food producers. We've gone through the worst 4 years ever with COVID, Brexit, the war in Ukraine. I'd have the smallest boat in the fleet, and I'd be down 30,000 in the last 2 years. And I'm just wondering why we're constantly forgotten about.
Okay.
And no matter how many times we've been to Leinster House in the past year, you know, it's all in vain.
All right. So you're saying you've never had as little money. Is that your position?
Yeah. Well, our position is that we've never been in a worse situation. The Irish Exchequer has never been in a better situation. You know, why can't they give us something this year? All right, it's just beyond belief.
All right,
that you read through the budget in our whole industry is forgotten about again.
You're through to the man himself here, Michael. So let's ask Minister Donoghue.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for calling
in.
And I can guarantee you that the Minister for Agriculture, Charlie McConnell-Logue, does not forget and is very much aware of the value of our fisheries sector. In terms of what is in it for you in this budget, inside the budget that he delivered, there's €177 million that is there to support your sector and fishermen like you. In terms of specifically what that is, I understand there's three particular schemes in place. There's an inshore fishery scheme that makes payments available depending on the length of your boat. There's a sustainable fishery scheme to try to help you with the kind of change that you need to make to ensure that, you know, your life and your practice is more sustainable. And there's also a young fisher scheme to try to get more people into your sector and ensure that it is sustainable in the years ahead. And I really hope, Michael, given the, you know, the difficulty of the work that you do, I don't think we'll have many other people calling into us today who'll be on a boat and working as you are, that those kind of schemes, that you qualify for at least some of them and they make a difference to your sector.
Michael?
Yeah, well, in relation to that answer, of the three schemes you mentioned, the second two schemes are grant aid schemes. And in grant aid, you first of all have to pay the 100% back the percentage of the grant aid. We don't have the 100% to pay, so therefore we will be ineligible to get back the other percentage. In the first scheme he mentioned, the inshore fishers scheme, that's coming out of the MFAF fund, a European fund, and it's an absolute pittance. We have to, it would be equivalent to what we lost per week. It's coming out of European funds, not the Irish Exchequer fund. My question is there any money in the Irish, in the budget coming out of Irish Exchequer funds for Irish fishermen? The schemes you mentioned are European Monetary and Fisheries Funds.
But the European schemes are funded by the Irish taxpayer. I mean, we are a net contributor to the European Union now, so our money goes into these schemes and it comes back to you. And I hope the fact that the inshore fisheries scheme at least offsets the losses that you face, which I think you mentioned there a moment ago, you know, does show its value and its help. But I can assure you that, you know, Charlie, when I sit down with him to negotiate the budget, is really aware of the issues that your sector faces and in the different schemes that are there that are ultimately co-funded by the Irish taxpayer. that they can make a difference.
Michael, we'll let you get back to it. Thank you so much. That's Michael there joining us from his boat. The lines are still open. We're going to take a quick break, but there's time still to get in touch with us here. 0818 715 105. Back after this. Now, straight back to our questions for ministers Jack Chambers and Pascal Donoghue. And Dan joins us on the line. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Marion.
How are you?
Very good, very good.
So, tell us what your question is.
To the ministers, given that USC was only introduced as an emergency and it was done quickly as a short-term measure, why is it still there and why has it not been removed with the same urgency that it was implemented?
All right, that's a good, solid question there for Minister Jack Chambers. USC, why isn't it gone?
Thanks very much, Dan, and appreciate you phoning in this morning. So part of what I've tried to do through the income tax package that I've delivered is a significant reduction in USC. So from 4 to 3%, which will benefit all workers between 25 and 70,000. And that's, you know, a lot of workers in our economy who I recognise pay significant income tax. Minister McGrath last year, my predecessor, reduced it from 4.5% to 4%. So we have tried to bring progressive reductions in USC through the last two budgetary packages that we've advanced, and I think it will be of benefit to workers in our economy.
I know
there is a wider feedback because it's been there for many years, and I suppose the position on your question is that USC brings in between 4 and 5 billion euro per year, and in any one budget, I don't think it's an honest position for me to say to you or to other workers in our economy that it's something we can correct in any budget. We have to be careful about making sure we've sustainability in our income tax system, and also make sure that our income tax system is competitive. And what I tried to do yesterday was strike the balance between those two things by trying to have an upward revision in the standard rate, which benefits workers, a significant increase in tax credits of 125 euro, and then also a significant reduction in the USC from 4 to 3%. But I appreciate the wider point. I suppose an immediate change to that would put our public finances in an unsustainable position and would raise sustainability issues of around our income tax system.
Okay.
And I have to be cognizant of that in how we design the budget. But I hope the change we did make yesterday and perhaps further changes that can be made in future years will benefit workers and our economy.
Right, Dan, you can't afford to get rid of it.
I think that's, in the context of the PAOE worker, they can't afford to pay it.
Dan, thanks very much for your call. I'm going to keep moving now. Jane is next. Good morning, Jane.
Morning, Claire.
You have concerns about student accommodation.
Yes, I do. So my question is around the student rental accommodation. I have two daughters living away going to college in Dublin. And each year, like as early as March, there's kind of a panic over next year's accommodation. So like to get accommodation of a decent standard that is affordable. So now I know the minister gave the temporary drop in fees and the renter's tax credit, but like personally, I would much prefer to see the money going into addressing this huge issue kind of at the root. So like the student rental market is very different and their needs are very different to the general rental market. And the student numbers are only set to grow.
So do you want to see the government building affordable student accommodation?
Yes. Specifically for students, and like now that we have a surplus of funds, I'm curious if there's any focus at government level on creating a functioning student accommodation market.
Okay,
because
Minister Donoghue is going to take
who
that
are
one.
Not taking up their places in college because
they've nowhere to stay,
and they can't secure it.
All right, so the government needs to go out and build affordable student accommodation.
Good morning, Jane. Thank you for calling. We need to make it both affordable and more accessible. That's why we've put in place the affordability measures regarding the reduction and the rental tax credit. In relation to how we build it, the budget that we have contains 100 million euro to do that. That will lead to the building of just over 1,000 new student units of accommodation, which the majority of which will be located within Dublin. And in that plan, 30% of that accommodation is targeted at being below market rates of rent. And the aim is to have that available next year, because I absolutely appreciate that accommodation become cheaper isn't any gain if the accommodation isn't available in the first place.
All right, Jane, thanks for calling. And we're going to move now to John. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
John, thanks for calling us today. What's your question? You have a civil service pension, is that right?
That is right, yes. Like, I'm a retired public servant, and like all public servants who entered the service before 1995, we were precluded from paying full PRSI, and accordingly we don't qualify for the state pension. Mm-hmm. And because we don't get the state pension, we lose out on all the once-offs like Christmas bonus and all that. And probably a bigger issue is that our spouses, unless they have an entitlement on their own right, have no entitlement to a pension. They don't have the unless they have their own contributions, their only entitlement might have been a means-tested, non-contributory pension. And obviously, with our pensions, they don't qualify for that.
So this is an anomaly for you, but it means a lot because you don't get any of these double payments at Christmas and you're not entitled to any of the benefits that we have been hearing so much about, fuel allowance and so on.
Exactly, that's it.
All right, Minister Donoghue.
Thank you, John, for calling in. Yes, I do understand you are on a different pension scheme that has been modified since then. Throughout your working life, working for our state as a civil servant, you would also have paid a lower rate of PRSI, which you acknowledge, which then means you can't access some of these payments that are available. The way that we are trying to deal with that is through the public sector wage agreement that we have in place, ensuring that as wages go up for those who are still in work, your pension goes up too. And as you know, for 2024, your pension has probably changed on three different occasions and gone up. And for next year, it's due to go up on two further occasions again in March and August of next year. So how we are trying to deal with that is ensuring that you have a pension that over time goes up in value as well.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time. But John, thank you very much. And to all of our callers who got in touch this morning, thank you very much for joining us on the programme. My thanks to the Minister for Finance, Jack Chambers.
Thank you.
And Minister for Public Expenditure, Pascal Donoghue. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.